Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Union Bank, locally owned with a commitment to lasting customer relationships. Union Bank offers customers personal and business banking, as well as wealth management services. Union Bank, member FDIC. Support also comes from The Ross. Opening today is Acquarella, a cinematic journey around the world from a frozen Russian lake to Miami in a hurricane chasing the beauty and raw power of water. Continuing is Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice, musical biography of one of the most versatile and successful recording artists of all time. Details at theross.org.
Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the Mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. Music, theater, and more this morning. I'll have a conversation with Lincoln-based pianist Paul Barnes and a violinist from one of the hottest current string quartets, Brooklyn Rider. That's coming up in about 19 minutes. Also this morning, a Nebraska singer-songwriter who moved to Nashville returns home for a couple of shows. And later in the program, superstar string player Pinkus Zuckerman and Amanda Forsyth will be here to talk about their concert tonight. If you're not going to be near your radio later, keep listening to Friday Live with the NET Nebraska mobile app or your smart speaker or on our website, netnebraska.org. To start off this morning, Aubund Music at First Plymouth opens their 2019-2020 season with a concert at First Plymouth Church called Only Light, Only Love. The concert is this Sunday at 3 p.m., and joining me now to talk about it are Aubund Music's Artistic Director, Tom Trenny, and Executive Director, Trey Coley. Good morning.
Good morning, Genevieve.
I love that you did that in chorus.
Yeah.
I always love when that happens.
Yeah.
Tom, what does the title of the concert come from, and what does it mean?
Yeah, our season this year is based on the concept of unity and light, particularly, and seemed the most appropriate place to start, at least as I could see it, was with some inspiration from Martin Luther King. You may remember he said, the darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. So hence, only light, only love. And the music that we'll sing carries, I hope, a message of hope and light and love to share in different ways, coming from different cultures, from different voices, different poets, different composers, arrangers, that sort of thing, but all carrying that same message of resilience and possibility.
Great. And who are the ensembles performing it, and are you conducting?
Thanks for asking. Yes. Sounding Light is a professional choir that I started back in my 20s. Now I think it's our 18th year this year. I've lost a little track. Seems hard to believe it was that long ago.
I'm calculating your age now, Tom.
Right. Yeah. But it's been wonderful to have them in residence here this week. There are singers with us from about 6 or 7 states, I think it is. And so we've come together for kind of on the island here in Lincoln for the week, such as it is. And we're going to sing this program here in Lincoln and then also have a run out to Dort University in Sioux Center, Iowa for a Saturday night program. And then in Omaha at St. Paul Lutheran on Sunday evening. So
why did you choose to do that at those other performances, at those other locations?
Well, I was hoping while we were all together, you know, that we could share this message beyond just our own particular concert house at First Plymouth. And so I reached out to some colleagues and friends to see who might be interested and open to that. And there's this wonderful violoncello duo that's playing with us, too. They're called Duo B. Philip Border is a cellist, and his wife Hirono is the violinist, and so they're coming in. He teaches at Luther College, so they are coming in from Iowa as well to share this weekend experience with us.
You know, I know this strays away from the concert a little bit. Tom, you're also doing some work at Nebraska Wesleyan. Do you mind talking about that? What are you doing at the school this year?
I'm filling in for the year as the director of choral activities after the long tenured director, Dr. Wyman, retired. So it's been wonderful to get to know the students there. Some of them are actually going to join us for the Lincoln concert on Sunday. And then we'll have guest choirs from those other communities I mentioned joining with us. That also seemed appropriate. You know, the message of creating beloved community, sharing, you know, and kind of broadening the possibility of who can participate was I think, an important part of the vision of this program.
Yeah. So anything else we should know about this upcoming concert? And then I'm curious to know what's ahead after this one.
Sure. I just want to reiterate that planning out the season, Tom always does such a great job of thinking about themes and building upon the legacy and life of MLK. We have a great lineup planned from here through May. So actually, Tom, I'll use that as a teaser. Do you want to talk about particularly the American Spiritual Ensemble next MLK weekend?
Yeah, I think that that is sort of one of the highlights of our year will be Martin Luther King weekend on the Sunday. The American Spiritual Ensemble is going to be coming there. This will be their first time to be in Nebraska, though they've sung all around the world. And so we're very thankful to be able to bring them here. And we just hoped this season particularly to lift up some voices that maybe are not as frequently seen and heard in this area of the country, and hope to see how we can grow from that.
Okay, lots of things going on for Auburn Music, as always. Auburn Music at First Plymouth opens their 2019-2020 season with a concert at First Plymouth Church called Only Lights, Only Love. That concert is this Sunday at 3 p.m. There are also performances at Dort College in Sioux Center, Iowa. That's this Saturday at 7 p.m. Or no, yes, this Saturday at 7 p.m. And in Omaha at St. Paul Lutheran Church this Sunday at 7:30 p.m. Tom Trenny and Trey Coley, always nice to see you. Thanks for talking about the concerts and the theme for this year.
Thank you for having us.
And you can link to more about this concert or anything you hear about on Friday Live by looking for the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. Phillips is a singer-songwriter based out of Nashville, Tennessee, born in Nebraska and raised in Omaha. She moved to Nashville to be closer to the music scene and to work on her writing. She'll be back in her home state, though, to play at Crescent Moon Coffee in Lincoln. That's a week from tonight, Friday, October 4th, and at the Waiting Room in Omaha on October 8th. And she joins me next here on Friday Live. Betsy, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we heard a little bit of your song, Someone Like You, just ahead of my introduction there, from your newest EP titled Like We're Talking. I imagine that song might be on your shows in Nebraska. What are you bringing with you?
I'll be playing all 5 songs for my new EP and some new ones as well. And actually, the show in Lincoln is going to be a bit longer than I usually play, so I'm playing a lot of covers. So I think it'll be kind of a fun, casual night of sharing songs.
How often do you make it back to Nebraska?
This past year, I've actually been making it back more often. I've, sang for some weddings, actually, which has been fun, something I don't usually do, but it's kind of a free trip home. I try to make it back for all the holidays. I'm too nostalgic to miss those, and at least every 3 months, I'd say.
How is Nashville for you? Is it hard being an artist in a town filled with just so many talented people all striving for similar things?
You know what, I think it's actually, it can be a good thing to get used to for artists. Well, my advice that I usually get to somebody, you know, moving here or starting it is if you have any jealousy whatsoever, turn that into admiration as soon as possible, and then you'll be happier before or after success. I admire the people around me, and I don't know what kind of artist I would be without kind of in a healthy way comparing myself to them. I think I wouldn't have grown as much. So I really love it. I'm inspired, and I think I'll be here a while.
Some of your music has sort of a country influence. There's some folk sound, and sometimes I hear a little slow season maybe type sound. Has living in Nashville influenced your style?
Oh my gosh, yes, definitely. I knew I liked some Americana before I moved here, but I just didn't even know what that word meant. I thought it was country, pop, just very, I don't know, broad genres, and then I realized, there's kind of a genre that's in It's always in the middle, but I didn't even know the word Americana. I thought you had to kind of be Miranda Lambert or nothing, you know. So kind of hearing different styles here has influenced me. I feel like I went through a huge phase of sounding a bit more country, just finding that and loving that, and I'm really glad I did that. I think I'm kind of pulling back and finding kind of my roots again, because I definitely don't even have a country accent or, you know, but I really enjoy that style and that style of writing. So I think I had to go through a bit of a phase to kind of come back around. I think Americana will always be in my sound a little bit, but I think I'm leaning a little bit more just straight singer-songwriter these days.
You had a video that premiered in April. Did you film that in Nebraska, or was it set in Nebraska?
Yeah, actually, I filmed it in Lincoln. So there are a couple, kind of remember, I think one shop at least people might recognize, kind of a thrift store in Lincoln. That was a Lincoln videographer. It was a fun time.
How did that come about?
So my friend Lindsay's in it. I kind of forgot. I'm like, why did we do that in Lincoln? My friend Lindsay appears in it, kind of acting, and I love her and wanted her to be in it. And I was like, well, when's the next time I'm going home? Who would even be able to do this video? And so I reached out to a couple of people and found a videographer. But it was really just inspired by wanting to make some art with my friend from high school. So she actually drove from Omaha to be in it.
Now, in another interview, you said you reached out to a producer who had worked with the band Lake Street Dive for your latest album. What inspired that collaboration for you?
I really loved a couple of albums that I heard. I'm trying to think if I even knew he'd worked with Lake Street Dive at that point. Maybe that was happening like right before we were going to work together, but I loved what he did with Caroline Spence, mainly. That stuck out to me. And then this another band, friends of mine, Freddie and Francine, both were EPs. And so just those two solid albums, I'm like, I could look around forever, but I feel it. And we got together and I was showing him some songs and he actually pointed out a couple things that I already knew I wasn't set on, but I hadn't told him that. And so, and it was like specific lines or specific sections. And I was like, okay, this feels right. I feel like we have the same vision and are hearing the same thing. So working with Dan was great.
Betsy Phillips' recent album is titled Like We're Talking, and we're going to hear a little of that title track in a moment. Her shows in Nebraska are in Lincoln at Crescent Moon on Friday, October 4th, and then in Omaha at The Waiting Room on Tuesday, October 8th. Betsy, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Shakespeare are featured on this week's Friday Live Extra podcast. Trumpeter Daryl White is looking forward to playing in Lincoln.
I'll make sure that we do some standards. Girl from Ipanema, Blue Bossa, Corcovado, a lot of Carlos Jobim. We're also going to do some things that involve how, at least in jazz, how we take jazz standards and turn them into Latin tunes.
Hear my conversation about First Friday Jazz and about a tour of of Othello coming to several Nebraska communities on the Friday Live Extra podcast. Download or listen online at netnebraska.org/radio. Stay with Friday Live. Composer Greg Simon will be here to talk about a performance of one of his pieces in Lincoln. That's in about 14 minutes. And Brooklyn Rider member Colin Jacobson will join me with pianist Paul Barnes in about 6 minutes. to discuss their performance at Kimball Recital Hall on their Lincoln Friends of Chamber Music concert. We are broadcasting from the Mill Coffee and Tea this week, but next week's show will be from Ord, Nebraska at the beautiful Golden Husk Theater. We will tape the show tonight at 7 p.m., so if you're in the Ord area, come to the show. And if you can't make it, that show will air next week right here in the usual spot at 9 a.m. a week from today. The Tada Theater, located here in the Haymarket in Lincoln, has been showcasing talent from Nebraska for 19 years. The Rocky Horror Show opens at Tada October 10th, and we have Christy Wilson, who plays Magenta, and Brent Welch, who plays Frankenfurter, with us today to talk about that. Welcome to the show this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Great to have you here. How many times do you know has Rocky Horror Show graced the stage at Tada? Is this the first time, do you think?
This is the second time we've done the show.
Uh-huh. Okay. It's such a fun show, I think, for the uninitiated. I think, would you say the audience is as much a character of this show as the people on stage?
Oh, definitely. They definitely take a major role in the show, for sure.
Yeah, so cut loose and have fun when you're there.
So for those that do not know anything about this show, how do you describe Rocky Horror to people who don't know about it?
You know, it's you have to come with a very open mind because it's very fun. Come also looking for different types of humor because it's a very hilarious show as long as you stick to the script and do it the way the playwright means to do it. It's a very fun and campy show.
Yeah, for sure. Have you guys worked with Tada for very long? Have you done other shows with Tada?
I have worked with Bob before, but not necessarily in this capacity. But I know Brent has done a lot of shows with Tada.
Yeah, it was one of Tada's first productions when they used to be above the mill here.
Yeah,
in the
old
loft. And yeah, so I've done quite a few stuff with Bob and keep coming back. It's been a lot of fun.
So let's talk about your characters a little bit. Who wants to start? Brent, you want to talk about your character?
Sure.
Who is Frankenfurter?
Frankenfurter, he's a very complex type of character, I think. You need to be able to find, you know, the fun part of him, as well as he's also very sarcastic. Huh? He kind of lives in his own mind and in his own world, and every now and then he pops out. He likes to be in control of stuff. But however, you find out as the show goes on that there's definitely something a little bit awkward about him, and that's what really makes him fun, because I think people can associate with that awkwardness.
Yeah, yeah.
As well as wanting to be the one in control, but really having absolutely no idea how to be that person.
What's your costume like, Brent?
You know, it's really kind of fun and sexy. I wear for the beginning of the show, after the reveal, I have on, you know, a really cool black bustier and
nice,
you know, lacy panties and a garter belt and fishnet stockings, all the fun stuff you expect of Frankenfurter, and then a gorgeous costume for the floor show. You'll have to come and see it.
Okay, a surprise there in one of the costumes. Christy, what about your character?
Well, Magenta is what Frankenfurter would like to think of as a very faithful servant. But she and her brother, Riff Raff, played by John Schnorr, perhaps have some nefarious ulterior motives.
Good. Nefarious is an excellent word.
Thank you. It was my word of the day.
Thank you. That's so good. Now, this show often comes with kind of a Rocky Horror kit that the audience can use in a sort of audience participation that's traditional. Can you describe the purpose of that, and can people bring their own, or how's that working for this production?
Yeah, please.
There are kits that will be able to be purchased at the theater. Traditionally, when people have seen this production, the movie version, there's a lot of there's some throwing of some things and
toast maybe.
And there's some really fun things in that kit that can just help the audience really fully get themselves immersed in the production. So yeah, however, we definitely encourage that.
Yeah, however, the only thing that they will allow you to use at the show will be the kit.
Okay.
Because it's just for the safety of the actors, not throwing stuff on the stage and not hitting people in the head with toast and spraying other people with water bottles. Because my mom will be there and she'd be pretty ticked off if she got sprayed or hit with toast or anything
good,
like that.
It's good to note, right? Which is why I asked about that. Well, Christy Wilson and Brent Welch are in the Ta-Da staging of the Rocky Horror Show that opens October 10th. And you can link to more information on the Ta-Da website by going to our website. That is netnebraska.org. Just look for the Friday Live page. Christy and Brent, thanks.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is Friday Live, challenging, informing, and inspiring. This is NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Here on Friday Live, I get to talk about a concert happening this Thursday in Lincoln at the Lead Center for Performing Arts with string quartet Brooklyn Rider. We get to talk with member, composer, violinist Colin Jacobson, and I'm also talking here with Lincoln's own pianist, Philip Glass specialist, cantor, and Marguerite Scribante, professor of music at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln Glencorf School of Music, Paul Barnes. What a long intro for you, Paul. It's great to have you both here on the show this week.
Wonderful to be here.
Yeah, likewise.
This performance, October 3rd, coincides with the release of a new album as well. Who wants to tell our listeners about this album?
Well, I've been working on it for a very, very long time, and I was thrilled when Brooklyn Rider agreed to partner with me on this. First of all, the funding for the album came from the Finnegan Foundation, It's just been an absolute joy working with Brooklyn Rider on the project. The quintet, as you know, many were at the world premiere last year. And so we got together in January to rehearse and then recorded at a wonderful recording studio, Octavin Audio, in Mount Vernon. And it's been an absolute joy to work with these guys.
I love the genesis of the piece that Paul's singing of hymns, of, Byzantine chant forms, you know, sort of the kernel that got Philip Glass going on writing that piano quintet. And I think you said that he hadn't ever worked with a Byzantine chant before, right, Paul?
One of our very first conversations when we met 25 years ago almost was on the relationship of Buddhist and Byzantine chant. And then I just thought, oh my gosh, his style and Byzantine chant would be a match made in heaven. And so I chanted this communion hymn for the Feast of the Annunciation, because I'm the head chanter at Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church here in Lincoln. And he went bonkers for it. And he said, oh, this is great. I would love to base the new piano quintet on this hymn.
I think it's amazing to listen to this music and how it manages to be identifiably Philip Glass, of course, but yet you hear this chant in there at the same time.
I love the way he works it in. To me, it really relates. I mean, I don't know if this is true or not, but the time he spent in Paris and with Nadia Boulanger and crowd, and I hear this as a very, very much in the lineage of, say, Fauré's music, and is like always like a French thing hanging in the background. I just think it's a very classic way of writing piano quintet. The way he nestles the strings within the piano writing creates a beautiful texture. Even just that idea of using a hymn feels to me like Fauré might have done in a way. I don't know if you agree with that, Paul.
Oh, I agree with it totally. I remember after I had given him the hymn and sang the hymn for him, and I remember he did, you know, his work with Nadia Boulanger, and she was a taskmaster, taught everybody how to harmonize correctly. And the first thing that he told me after he started writing the piece was, well, he took the hymn and he had multiple harmonizations that he worked out for it, you know, like a good theory student. And then he picked, you know, the one that worked the best. And so when the hymn enters in the first time in the piano, it's just this gorgeous part writing, you know, all the way throughout the whole quintet, in fact. And so, yeah, you can definitely see that he was well taught.
Now, what else is on the program on October 3rd?
Colin, I'm not sure if you know, but you guys are starting off with the Quartetsatz, which I just think it's one of the most beautiful musical utterances ever out of Mr. Glass's pen. And your performance, oh my God, the recording is just stunning.
Oh, thank you. I love it because it's one of those where it's such a simple but perfect architecture, you know, within that one movement, the way it starts from, I think, just two lines and then things coalesce and build to a peak in the middle. And it's really like a very symmetrical up and down structure. And then it goes away. You were talking about chant and Buddhist chant and Byzantine chant, and all of his music feels to me like it has a sense of breath that takes you all the way through. And so within that piece, there's like one breath you can feel going all the way through. And then, of course, there's the smaller breaths of all the phrases that make up that longer breath.
It's absolutely true. It's interesting because the chord progression that he uses in that piece is the same chord progression that he begins the quintet with. So for those that have their harmonic thinking caps on, they're going to say, hey, I've heard that progression before. And this is what I've referred to as his love progression that he also uses in his opera Orfeu. It's absolutely gorgeous, and it kind of ties in both of these pieces. But what I think is really fascinating, and Colin, I don't know whether you would agree with this or not, but, you know, that unbelievable slow movement of the Beethoven. It's that same meditative F major that he uses, and I just see that that's also a connection that the audience is going to make when they're listening to the Beethoven Quartet. They're going to be thinking possibly of the Quartetsatz in the slow movement.
The composer Caroline Shaw describes that movement of Beethoven's Opus 132 Quartet as having a nest-like structure. It is an incredible movement written also in old style, I mean, inspired by an old church mode, Lydian mode, that traditionally is associated with healing, perhaps going back to the Greeks as well. So it is a nice thing to tie the program together there.
I'm wondering how the collaboration between all of you came about.
Paul's relationship with Philip Glass goes back long before ours, but ours is pretty long too. And I think a shared love of his music meant that our paths were destined to cross at some point. But Paul had this quintet written and wanted to record it. And simultaneously, we've been on the path of recording all of Philip's quartets as they arise, you know, for his label, Orange Mountain Music. So this seemed like Paul approached us about recording the piano quintet and along with Quartetsatz and the quartet number 8. So the stars aligned.
Well, it's so nice to have you both here in one conversation and hear about all of the connections and about the music on the CD, Annunciation, featuring the music of Philip Glass, Paul Barnes, and Colin Jacobson and Brooklyn Ryder together on that project, as well as on a concert on October 3rd, coming up this Thursday at the Lead Center for Performing Arts in Lincoln, featuring that work, Annunciation by Philip Glass.
And I do want to mention that the concert is actually in Kimball Hall, sponsored by the Lead Center and the Lincoln Friends of Chamber Music and the Glencorf School of Music. And we are going to be having a CD release reception catered by the Parthenon. And so we're all a Brooklyn Ryder, and we will be signing CDs and eating baklava and spanakopita.
Well, Paul and Colin, great conversation, and have a great concert. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Friday Live on NET Radio. You can find more information about this concert or any event you hear about on Friday Live on our website. That address is netnebraska.org/radio. The world is forced into survival mode when a pandemic hits. In a sequel to her novel A Line Between, Nebraska author Tosca Lee's new thriller sees her heroine emerge from an old missile silo to discover what's left of her world.
The vast majority of this book takes place out in western Nebraska. And actually, that underground silo is based on a real missile silo home that exists near Kimball, Nebraska, that people live in. So
where someone has repurposed.
Yes, exactly.
You can hear a complete interview with Tosca Lee talking to books host Pat Leach about her new novel, A Single Light. It's online now at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. I want to take a moment to talk about our new podcast through NET. It's the second season of the Plain Story podcast, which we're calling The Sound of Home. This week, we released episode 4, and take a listen to this as guitarist Daniel Martinez talks about his home of Peru.
Home, what comes to mind is ocean, the sound, the breeze, eating on the corners of the streets, my family gathering together, being loud and eating outside, and kids playing outside the streets, basically dirt streets. Somebody without any appointment just come to my house, knocks the door and say, Daniel, how you been? Come in, let's eat.
That's from the second season of the Plain Story podcast. Look for it wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also go to our website, plainstorypodcast.org, for extras, pictures, and some video of all the musicians we talked to. Next here on Friday Live, the Glencore School of Music at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln has a few performances coming up now that the semester is in full swing. Sunday, October 6th, the Symphony Orchestra performs their season opener in Kimball Recital Hall. And Tuesday, October 1st, the Flyover New Music Series will give a performance in Westbrook Music Building. Rebecca Niederheiser, whose last name I forgot to ask about before this.
It's Netterheiser.
Netterheiser. Rebecca Netterheiser is associate conductor for the UNL Symphony Orchestra, and she joins me here this morning with composer and assistant professor of composition at UNL, Greg Simon. Greg's music will be featured on that October 6th concert performed by UNL students as he curates the Flyover Music Series as well. We'll talk about both here this morning. Rebecca and Greg, it's great to have you both here.
Good morning.
Hey, Genevieve, how are you?
Good, good. Now that I'm coffeed, I'm good. Rebecca, what's the full program for this concert on the 6th, and how did Greg's piece become part of that program?
It's such an amazing process putting together a program, and I feel like Greg's piece was kind of the cornerstone and the catalyst of which we kind of build our whole, in a way, our season on. We're featuring a season of premieres starting with his piece, Promise Me You Won't Believe a Single Word, and then we're also going to later in the season open with the UNL opera, The Gambler's Son, written by Tyler White. Our story, I should say, our program, it's stories past and present, and the whole program, starting with Greg's piece, really centers on each piece comes with a story and kind of a connection point with audiences. So we're going to open with Ducas Fanfare from La Paris, and then followed by that, the world premiere of Greg's piece, Horn Concerto by Alan Mattingly. He's going to be our soloist, Horn Concerto number 3. And then we're going to end with the iconic Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony.
Is that Alan's own piece?
No, he's okay. Performing.
He's the soloist. I gotcha. Yes. Okay, I was like, wait.
Only one premiere this time.
And it's interesting that you mentioned Tyler's work too, because, you know, we have more than one composer at UNL,
yeah.
And the students get to play all that work. And that particular piece has a connection to Cozad, Nebraska.
It does.
So that's pretty interesting. Greg, I'm wondering if some of those students feel just a little nervous, not only to have the composer right there, but a composer who's also their teacher in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the best response is that they're not nearly as nervous as I am. but that being the case, I mean, I think that it is such a privilege to have the chance to write for orchestra as a composer. These opportunities are so rare. That I think when you start, the process of writing, and especially as you get into the sort of end game of it where the musicians are working on the music and dealing with it in ways that are, I think, both kind of rewarding and daunting, and ways in which they hopefully are joyous, in which they also struggle. I think you, if you were going to write for orchestra in the first place, you kind of have to love the process. And my hope is that, you know, for a lot of these students, especially some of them who may not have had that much opportunity to experience new music, which is a completely different type of challenge than performing a piece that has been around for 200 years and for which masterwork recordings exist and things like that. Knowing that they can be the foremost authorities of this piece in the entire planet, I would hope that that would be exciting. I think my job now as an educator is to be collaborative and supportive and certainly open to criticism where it comes and willing to listen to what the musicians have to say about their own instruments and about how maybe they can make decisions that can help my music speak a little better.
What have the students been doing up to this point? What can you give people an idea of what their activities are leading up to this concert?
Yeah, I think probably Rebecca can speak better than I can to like the ins and outs of the orchestral rehearsal.
You know, it's an interesting process. It's a combination of full rehearsals, but also sectionals where, you know, students will get together within their own sections and work out specific passages. And now we're definitely at the point where we're putting it together in the larger picture. And so I think students are having a fuller appreciation of how not only each piece functions individually, but as a whole within the program.
And Greg, while we have you here, do you want to talk about that October 1st Flyover Music Series concert?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Flyover New Music Series. Flyover New Music is our in-house new music series at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. It is currently, the October 1st concert is going to be the premiere of the third season of Flyover. It is a completely student-run production that features exclusively new compositions by students at the UNL Glencorf School of Music, performed, let's say, 99.9% by other students at the UNL Glencorf School of Music. And all of the production decisions, all of the publicity, all of the social media presence, and all of the concert production as well, are all run by students as well. So it's a project that we are extremely excited about in composition, and the student enthusiasm in response to it has just been staggering. October 1st, we're going to have 7 brand new pieces, all world premieres, and they range from everything from a new piece for solo hammered dulcimer to a premiere of a long-form composition for jazz combo. So it's going to be a very, very cool concert.
Yeah, very cool. I'll mention here also that Greg's music will be featured on the October 6th edition of The Verge here on NET Radio. We'll talk more about his music and hear some of his compositions. Rebecca is associate conductor for the UNL Symphony Orchestra. Say your last name again, Rebecca.
Netterheiser.
My apologies for not writing that down. Rebecca Netterheiser. She works for UNL Symphony Orchestra. Greg's music and more are on a concert at Kimball Recital Hall on UNL's city campus, and that is Sunday, October 6th at 3 p.m., so a week from this Sunday. Both Rebecca and Greg are with the Glencorf School of Music. Thanks for being part of the show this morning.
Thank you, Genevieve.
Thank you.
And for links to more about this concert or that episode of The Verge or anything you hear about on Friday Live, head to netnebraska.org/radio, and as you scroll down, you'll see the icon for Friday Live, The Verge, and more. This is listener-supported NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Ensemble called Russian Renaissance, the winner of the 2017 M Prize, is coming to the Tassel Performing Arts Center in Holdridge on Tuesday, October 8th. Joining me to tell us more about the ensemble and what instruments they play and about their concert is Ivan Vinogradov, who plays the contrabass balalaika. Ivan, it's nice to meet you.
Yes, nice to meet you too.
Now, tell us what other instruments are in your ensemble besides the one that you play.
There is a Russian national traditional instrument in our ensemble, like balalaika. We have two kinds of balalaikas in our ensemble, balalaika prima and balalaika contrabasso or balalaika double bass. And balalaika families like violin family, violin, viola, cello, and double bass. So in balalaika family is the same. Balalaika prima, balalaika seconda, balalaika alto, balalaika basso, and biggest instrument of the family is balalaika contrabasso. And in our ensemble there is two kind of balalaika, balalaika prima and balalaika double bass. The other instrument is the oldest Russian string instrument, and it's called domra. Anastasia Sakharova plays two kinds of domra, domra prima or and domra alto. The third instrument is the button accordion. This is Russian type of button accordion, and it's called bayan. The fourth instrument is my instrument, balalaika contrabasso.
It's interesting that there's instruments like the bayan that are related to other instruments in the world. Your music is described as world music, but with a Russian soul. What do you mean by that?
The main concept of our arrangement is to bring some musical material, no matter what kind of music, because we bring music which we like. It can be Brazilian jazz or song of Beatles or some Russian melodies. We try to do some new things with this music because we are Russian people. So therefore, it's made by Russian soul.
I see, right. So you're connected to your Russian roots, but you're also playing some non-traditional Russian music as well, using those traditional instruments.
Yes, mostly we play not traditional music. We think that this is a new way of our instruments and a new way of collaboration with new music.
Now, you guys won the M Prize in 2017. Have you guys won some other awards for your unique playing as well?
In 2016, we won a Cup of Mundial, but in accordion competition, we won the Vienna International Music Competition, and we won the first prize in this competition. It was an online competition. 2 years ago, last year, we won all Russian competition.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Now, has the group ever been to the United States or to Nebraska before?
Yes, we were in U.S. a lot of times, but never in Nebraska.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to having you in Nebraska. Russian Renaissance is the name of the ensemble. I've been talking with Ivan Vinogradov about that ensemble. They will be playing not just traditional Russian music when they come to Holdridge to play at the Tassel. That concert is on Tuesday, October 8th. Ivan, thanks for telling us about your group, about the instruments, and your unique music.
Thank you. We're looking forward to Nebraska.
And for more information about Russian Renaissance, the Tassel, or anything you hear about on Friday Live, you can go to our website at netnebraska.org/radio and find the Friday Live page. I'm Genevieve Randall. This is Friday Live on listener-supported NET Radio and netnebraska.org. I'm joined by Robert Goldberg next, host of Nebraska Concerts, here to tell us what's coming up this weekend that he's excited about.
Thanks, Genevieve. I know that you get to hear great events and artists on Friday Live, events that you might be able to go to, but on Nebraska Concerts, we bring the artists to you. And one of the artists featured this week has found a niche for sure. Genevieve, I know that you knit and crochet.
Mm-hmm.
What do you find fascinating about it?
I don't know, that something relaxing about it, but there's also something just satisfying about how those patterns come together.
Well, patterns is the word. There's a piece called Pattern Study on this concert this week, and it's by an American composer, Stacy Bowers. It's very cool. He puts 12 random patterns over another group of seven, and what's fun about it is that he doesn't tell the musicians what to play at all. He doesn't tell them how loud, how fast, he doesn't tell them the order, so it's kind of made up on the spot.
Interesting. A little bit of improv and plan together all in one.
Exactly.
Well, a study of patterns and more this weekend. Robert Goldberg is the host of Nebraska Concerts, and you can listen to this week's show Sunday at 1 p.m. Central. You can stream it online and learn more about Nebraska Concerts on the Nebraska Concerts page. That is at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, Genevieve.
To check out the arts calendar on our website, both to make plans and to add your event. That address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here's some highlights. Blue Cat Gallery and Studio in Wayne is featuring the exhibit Natural World. That's through October 26th with textile works from a group of 13 artists. Tuesday in Wayne at 6:30, the Majestic Theater presents the premiere of Ever Fallen by Dr. Michael White with red carpet photos, a Q&A, and an after party. And in Omaha on Tuesday at 10:30 a.m. at Washington Library, Opera or Operation Storytime introduces opera to our youngest audiences by exploring singing, playing, talking, and reading. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET Radio comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org. And support for programming comes from History Nebraska, celebrating 100 years of women's suffrage at the Nebraska History Museum in Lincoln through the exhibit Votes for Women. To learn more, history.nebraska.gov/museum.
Coming up in about 6 minutes here on Friday Live, violinist Pinka Zuckerman and cellist Amanda Forsyth will be here to talk about their concert in Lincoln. Next here on Friday Live, we do have a content warning. This next story contains graphic details about racism and lynching. Tomorrow marks the 100th anniversary of the lynching of Will Brown in Omaha. A new play opening tomorrow at Omaha's Blue Barn Theater looks at Brown's life before that fateful day. Many of the members of the production are from Omaha, and they hope to shine a light on the lynching and why the story should be retold one century later. NET Radio's Brandon McDermott has this story.
Omaha, 1919.
At the Blue Barn Theater in Omaha, about a dozen actors are on stage practicing for an upcoming production called Red Summer. The play doesn't focus on the lynching of Will Brown or the riot that preceded it. Instead, it's a look at Will Brown, the man. The playwright, Beaufield Berry, said she took clues from Will Brown's life, though she says there weren't many facts available to create a fictionalized account leading up to his lynching.
Was not to focus on the tragedy of his death, the appalling nature of his death, but really give him a voice and give him a life.
In 1919, Will Brown was accused of raping a white woman. The next day, Brown was arrested, and the woman purported to have been raped identified him as her attacker. The woman later retracted her claims that Brown had raped her. Nonetheless, Brown was taken to the Douglas County Courthouse. 2 days later, an angry mob, estimated between 5 and 20,000, gathered around the courthouse, setting it on fire. The mob then stormed it looking for Brown. They got him. The descriptions are tough to hear and accounts differ, but after dragging him out of the building, he was stabbed and beaten before being hanged from a light pole, his body shot with hundreds of bullets. Then he was cut down and his mutilated body set on fire.
I think it speaks for itself that Will could have been anyone. You know, he was someone who was chosen basically at random and received a horrible ending.
Barry says Will Brown's life and lynching is not only Black history, it's also Omaha and Nebraska history. She thinks back to the red summer of 1919 when millions of Blacks were migrating north trying to escape the Jim Crow South.
So imagine you're running from lynchings. You've got family, you've got friends that you've lost to mobs of angry white people. And you come up here and you see it happen again on the courthouse stairs. And this was supposed to be the good life for everyone.
Omaha wasn't alone. During the summer of 1919, there were race riots in Chicago, St. Louis, Washington, D.C., and many other cities across the country. More than 100 Blacks were killed during the violence that ensued during the summer, including 76 who were lynched.
Was you already brought up on charges there yourself, Brown?
I was the boogeyman that day. Ain't nothing coming.
Oh, on the account you crippled?
On the account I ain't no rapist.
That's Will Brown's character at a rehearsal for the play. Antonio Duke is playing Will Brown.
To walk the same streets he walked and to really just the cultural like mores of Omaha as you're speaking this text is very unique and very, I think, powerful.
Duke says the production will be like a mirror for the people watching to reflect on Omaha's past.
Usually acting is acting truthfully under imaginary circumstances, but this circumstance actually happened.
Duke is one of the few members of the production not from Omaha originally, though he's doing what he can to get the feel of the city and the history of the lynching before the play opens.
I'm walking around Omaha and I'm seeing what he saw. That is a very rare opportunity for an actor to really soak in.
The summer of 1919 was coined the Red Summer, and the play is as well, referring to more than 25 anti-Black riots that occurred. Regina Palmer is part of the play's ensemble.
We're bringing it up 100 years later so we can maybe just finally start the healing process.
She hopes the production will cause people to look back and hopefully to take steps forward to bridge the historical racial gap in our state.
I think that conversation can start to be had because I think for a while maybe people were too afraid to bring it up. Maybe people really didn't know.
Brandy Smith plays Hannah in the play. Smith is from Omaha, went to public schools, and didn't learn about the lynching of Will Brown until she was an adult. She says it's important, even 100 years later, to tell this story.
I think this play is a very good way to address that because no one in this show was a slave, yet unfair things still happened. What do you know? That's Black life.
Smith says she's been to the Douglas County Courthouse before and was surprised to find out that bullet holes are still in the ceiling from the riot.
Those things are still there. They never even thought to repair that.
Smith says in 100 years since, Omaha as a whole hasn't come to terms with its dark past.
That moment, to me, hasn't passed. We've built things around it, but that is still there. That energy, that spirit is still there.
But it do lead me to wondering, if white ladies be lying like that, why you with one, Jeff?
Bofield Berry says the thousands in the mob that took part in the lynching aren't alone. There were tens of thousands of Omahaans in 1919 who moved on with their life as if nothing terrible had happened.
And some people got to sit at their tables and read the newspaper completely unaffected. And we can still see that in motion, in play, today in America.
Berry says she wants people to understand the gravity of the story and how ripple effects of the lynching are felt in the Black community to this day. She hopes the play will do that. I'm Brandon McDermott.
Did noisy traffic or a loud passenger in your car just interrupt your Friday Live experience? Well, the digital world has given us a do-over. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. That address is netnebraska.org. Joining us next here on Friday Live is Lincoln Symphony Orchestra Music Director Ed Polichek, with guest soloists on tonight's concert, violinist Pinkus Zuckerman and cellist Amanda Forsyth. life. They are performing on the LSO's season opener titled Superstar Strings. That's tonight at 7:30 p.m. There is also a pre-concert chat at the Lead Center ahead of the concert at 6:45 p.m. Ed, Amanda, and Pankus, welcome to Friday Live.
What a great, great to be here. Yeah. Great to be back here.
Well, yes, and welcome back, Ed. We know Ed spends his summers in Baltimore. And then we lure him back to Nebraska every year. I'm so pleased that the two of you could make it to the Mill this morning. How does it feel to perform and tour together as a couple?
You go first.
We always go together is what she's saying.
Yeah, well, it's just not as lonely as going by yourself, that's for sure.
Aw, that's nice. It doesn't ever get in the way, though, I hope.
Oh, my God, no.
I mean, you know, some people work together really well, and I imagine making music together, too, that must be really, really something special.
Yes, I'm a bit spoiled, so I don't really like to play with other violinists anymore.
Me too.
That's not true, everyone. I love everyone.
I mean, people always talk about music as a conversation, and in many cases it really is, between instrumental sections. Does it work that way for the two of you when you're doing something like the double concerto that you're playing tonight?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
We just have a wink or a look or a move or a smile or just a dirty look. It all works.
Are there some of those dirty looks occasionally? Uh-oh.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, the music on this concert tonight is just delicious. Ed, can you give us the rundown of the program we've got lined up here?
Sure. It's bookended by Brahms. I love the combination of Brahms and Dvorak. I've done it several times, and I love, because of the passing of, Brahms even said, the passing of his mantle onto Dvorak, and he admired Dvorak as a young composer. So we're going to open with the Brahms St. Anthony Chorale, the Haydn variations.
Mm-hmm.
For orchestra, followed by all Dvorak. So then we have Pinkus Zukerman doing the great romance of Dvorak. We have Amanda Forsyth then doing Silent Woods.
Beautiful. Gorgeous.
Yeah, really. And then we'll close the first half with two of the Slavonic dances, number 5 and 7 of the Opus 78, I think it is. And then after intermission, I'll combine forces with the great double concerto for violin and cello.
Yeah, wonderful. It's an amazing program.
It's a great way to close the program, and it's a spectacular way to open our season.
Yeah, I was going to say, what an opener you guys have. Amanda and Pankus, you two both have very full schedules touring, and I've read that when you need to kind of shut down from music and performing, the two of you do that in kind of different ways. Would you mind talking about that a little bit?
What does he do? Tell me.
I read that you listen to Prince. Is this true?
Well, that's been going around in the media for a while now. It's indeed true, but I do have other musicians that I listen to. I tend not to listen to classical music unless it's a specific mood. You know, music is to inspire whatever mood you want, right? So you'll look through your Apple library and say, I feel like crooning right now, or I feel like headbanging right now, or I would love to listen to choir, you know, so it could be any mood.
Yeah.
I don't think Pinkus listens to music the same way I do, but we have Alexa now, so I just play whatever I want when I want.
Yeah.
Hey, Alexa.
Is it kind of interesting to use the technology like that for classical music specifically? Have you had some experiences with that?
Because I have. Alexa, who is Pinkus Zukerman? And she says, I don't know that.
Oh my goodness, is that true?
Alexa, who is
Amanda? Only now house.
Exactly. Alexa, who is Amanda Forsyth? She goes, Amanda Forsyth is a Canadian cellist, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, ha, ha, ha.
Oh my goodness. All right, Amazon needs to take note and fix Alexa, because Alexa needs
competing.
To know.
Myself.
Boy, that is just really something. Oh. You know, both of you started playing music at a really young age, and you kind of grew up in a musical household, Amanda.
Yes.
Was that true for you, too? Did you grow up in a musical household?
Oh, yes.
What kind of music did you grow up listening to?
Well, Ed was just talking about an accordion before we got on the air. My dad used to play the accordion very well.
Oh.
And he also played violin, he played clarinet. He was the ultimate klezmer.
Really?
I first heard the sounds of a real
wow.
klezmer. But he
awesome.
Was good, trained himself at the age of about 14.
And clarinet,
that's much later in Israel. But he did, to earn a living, he trained himself to play the violin classically in Warsaw. Because he was one of eight children, and he had to feed the family. So he traveled by tramway from a little town about 45 minutes away and took lessons and then played in a cafe house in the evening. So I kind of got to know all that stuff before I even played one note of a violin.
Yeah, yeah. How did you choose the violin?
He did.
He chose it.
Well, actually, a friend of his said, why don't you give him a violin? I was playing the clarinet, which was really awful.
Well, not for klezmer.
Recorder to learn to play.
Sure.
To learn the notes and so on. And eventually, seven and a half, I started playing the fiddle.
I mean, the clarinet gets, if you're talking klezmer, the clarinet gets to do all that, like, growly stuff or those kind of weeping sounds, if you can do it. But it's, yeah, but right. Well, violin certainly has worked out well for you, I would say.
Not too bad.
Do you have some specific memories of growing up with music, Amanda?
Well, yes, my father was a composer, and so he would listen to, you know, the composers of the time. And there was a period of time in the 70s which musicians were writing quite ugly music, I have to say, and very frightening for a child who was trying to sleep in the basement in the snow in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And so he would put on, you know, Peter Maxwell Davies or, you know, Voice of the Whale by George Crumb, which is beautiful, but very scary for me. So in terms of what was on in the house, I heard everything.
Oh, that's quite something to be exposed to.
You would practice the piano
growing up
for the cello pieces I was playing and trying to learn the piano part. So I was always yelling out that there were wrong notes.
Guess what? She's still doing it.
You know, we've talked a bit about new music on the show today, and Pankus, a piece that the two of you both premiered earlier this year, I think earlier this year, by Avner Dorman, a double concerto that was in honor of your birthday. How does it feel to play music dedicated to you for your birthday, to be honored in that way with new music?
Well, it was tremendous. I mean, we chose together Avner's way of writing music, which we like, and we worked on it for a good 8-9 months together. He's a wonderful musician, very good composer. I knew his father. His father's still alive. He was first bassoon of the Israel Philharmonic for 35 years, Zev Dorman. He had to retire recently because after 65 in Israel, we retire people. So it was quite unusual. And he came actually to he and his mom came to a concert now that we did in Boston at the Tanglewood. It was very nice to see him. On the other side, he was so proud. You have no idea. Mm. I have no words. Because he said, my God, this is two generations of Israelis that I have grew up with, meaning his son and myself. But he and I are sort of the same age, so it's not exactly two generations, but very proud.
Very proud. So nice. I mean, it really is like there's a family connections that you make with other musicians, I feel. Yeah, for sure.
Where we're going, I'm going on Wednesday back to Israel for the last 10 days of Zubin Mehta's actual official music directorship. And so a bunch of friends are coming, and that's 51 years. So it's a family, really.
Yeah, for sure. And we've talked a little earlier with the composer who was here about the difference in playing music, like the Brahms that you're playing tonight. There's all these traditions, there are standards that are set up. There's, you know, there's already this stuff where people have put their mark or their interpretation on it. But when you're playing that new music...
Yeah, we just do what we think is right, and that becomes a tradition. Hopefully the piece will be played by other musicians, of course. That's the greatest compliment to a composer, that it's played by not just the people who commissioned it.
Yeah.
And it's very important, I think, nowadays to push in that direction, because it's obviously been a tremendous downturn in classical music and in attendance and in appreciation, and our market is just getting flooded with musicians. We are matriculating musicians every year, and just fewer and fewer opportunities. So that you do that at least guarantees us, hopefully down the road, that those traditions are going to continue.
Yeah, and LSO actually for the first time this year has an in-residence composer as well.
Right.
So you're
and we made that commitment several years ago that every season we're going to because we're not a full-time orchestra here, but every season one program is devoted to the music of live composers.
Yeah, and the three of you will be at a pre-concert chat with our afternoon classical host Laura Black tonight, meeting the audience in that kind of more intimate setting. For those who go to those chats, how does that help? Do you think how does that help those audience members to kind of connect with what they're about to hear?
Well, it depends on the questions. I think those things are all good. The follow-up of these meetings with audience, with kids, with what we know today as, quote, outreach. We need to put seeds in different places. It's not just going there, playing, and getting out. So it's not an easy thing to do. The school systems are a little bit hesitant at the start, but once they see the development, particularly with the indigenous person, I think it's so important that we bring the indigenous person into our lives and we go to them. And they love it. Once we're there, nothing stops us. Nothing. The communication is extraordinary.
Well, it will be an exciting concert tonight with Lincoln's Symphony Orchestra. That is at 7:30 p.m., featuring guest soloists Pincus Zuckerman and Amanda Forsyth. Ed Polichik conducts the LSO in music by Brahms and Dvorak. And again, that pre-concert chat is at 6:45 in the Steinhardt Room. Ed, Pincus, and Amanda, it's been great having you on the show this morning.
Can I add something quickly?
You may.
I won't be at the pre-concert talk because I'm going to be putting on my jewelry provided by Sartor Heyman Jewelers in Lincoln, Nebraska. And the reason for that is that Chip Heyman, who is from Lincoln, Nebraska, the son, is a very, very dear friend of mine and is principal oboe in Canada, where we were in the orchestra in Ottawa for 18 years.
Oh, he's still there. I didn't realize that Lincoln connection.
Well, look, I'll be putting on jewels.
You're part of the Lincoln family too, Amanda. We didn't even know. Now we know, right?
Talk about gilding the lily. I love it.
That's great. Well, thanks again for being here, and so nice to chat with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. In the next hour here on NET, we'll play a major work from our library on Morning Concert, something to help you settle into your mid-morning. And today that major work reminds me of, you know, those new recipes that you keep making because it was so good the first time. Tchaikovsky's orchestral suite dedicated to his brother's wife impressed people so much when it first was performed. It was given a repeat performance a week later. Hear it on Morning Concert in about 7 minutes here on NET Radio. Joined next by Yuriko Doku, Assistant Director in the Office of Latino and Latin American Studies at UNO. She's here to tell us more about the biennial art exhibition Arte Latinx, bringing together Latinx artists from all over Nebraska with events through October 11th. Yuriko, thanks for joining me on Friday Live.
Thank you, Denise, for inviting me.
Now, tonight at 6 p.m., artist Nancy Friedemann Sanchez is going to give a talk, and then tomorrow she's leading a workshop. What happens with artists like Nancy Friedemann Sanchez, or you also have Yurisa Colon Torres on October 4th and 5th? How do all those artists present, and what are they presenting?
We created a committee, we call it Arte Latinx, and we came up with these different important artists, not only locally, but also nationally. So we want them to show what they do as an artist, their expertise. So Nancy's going to talk about MOPA MOPA, I think is what she does. And so the talk is going to be on Friday from 6 to 8 at UNO, Margaret White's Community Engagement Center. And then the workshop is going to be held on Saturday at the Union in the morning. So for Yurisa's work, Yurisa specializes in printmaking, bookmaking. So she's going to do kind of the same. They talk on Friday here at UNO, and then the workshop on Amplify Arts on Saturday. The way that we selected the guest artists is mainly because the committee is conformed by some UNO staff and some UNO students who think that those artists are important for local artists to meet and learn what they do. Fortunately, they were very open and they wanted to come to Omaha to be part of Arte Latinx.
The work of the two artists we've already mentioned and more artists is on display at El Museo Latino in Omaha. How many different artists' work are in the exhibit?
31 artists submitted work to be considered for Arte Latinx, and only 17 were selected. So we have approximately 30 artwork from those 17 artists. So we had a jury panel conformed by three artists, Pepe Coronado, Fidencio Fischot, and Ana Maria Ortiz-Ortiz, and they were the ones who selected those artwork.
And in the workshops that are being given, is there a limit on those? Can anyone participate, or...
Yes, the worship, we have approximately for 15 people, so we encourage the community to RSVP, and it is free and open to the public. So in our website, we created Eventbrite, so people can go there and RSVP. So, but it's open, free and open to the public.
Tomorrow, there will be a panel discussion at the Union for Contemporary Art from 2 to 4 p.m. Who are the panelists and what topics will be surveyed by that panel?
Karen Campbell from the Jocelyn Art Museum, she's the curator. Carlos Tortolero, who is the founder and president of National Museum of Mexican Art in Chicago. Adrian Duran, he's the associate professor of art and art history from UNO. And Nancy Freeman, the local artist, who's going to be part of the panel. So the idea is that they're going to talk about Latinx in art. So how the different areas, how they see that, how our Latino artists can participate in the museum, or how they could be more promoted and more visible. Because the idea is that try to help them to be more visible in to the art community. So we're going to have also Dr. Steven Torres. He is OAS faculty and also associate professor of foreign languages to be the moderator of the panel.
Now, there's a closing reception on October 11th at El Museo Latino. That's from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on that day. And that's the last day the artwork will be at the museum, too. Is that right?
After Yarisa's talk and workshop, we're going to have another talk by Hugo Zamorano. He's a local artist, and I think he's more like a graffiti artist, on October 10th. And also, his workshop is on October 8th. The last event is going to be the closing reception after all those talks and workshops on October 11th. So in September of 2015, we had we can call it our first art exhibit, and we call it Latino Latin American Artists Exhibition and Conversations. At that time was, you know, we hosted a one-of-a-kind exhibit solely focusing on Latino artists. And then this year we decided to rename it as the Arte Latinx, in order to represent the diversity of our community. So that's why it's kind of like, you know, the difference. And this time we had this great partnership with El Museo Latino to have the exhibit over there.
There's so many things going on and so many dates. We will make sure we put a link to more information on the Friday Live page, and that is at our website, netnebraska.org.
This exhibit is generally supported by, you know, by Humanities Nebraska, Nebraska Council, Cerebral Foundation, MAMA Foundation, and the UNO's Office of Multicultural Affairs. Without all support, we cannot make it come through our exhibit. This work is not only done by OAS. We have this great committee conformed by UNO staff, students, and faculty, and also with local artists and community members. So thanks to this committee, we make this project come true.
I've been talking with Yuriko Doku, who is Assistant Director in the Office of Latino and Latin American Studies at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. The exhibitions, workshops, and talks that are all part of Arte Latinx are ongoing now through October 11th. Yuriko, thanks so much for talking with me about this.
Thank you for inviting me.
And you're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black and Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Brandon Thomas, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.
Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Bedian Organ of Lincoln, celebrating 50 years of designing, building, and servicing pipe organs throughout Nebraska and across the United States. On the web at bedianorgan.com. And Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank, providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882 with 42 central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation.